And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM. Very pleased to have on the line with us Zafar Bangash. Zafar, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hello, Brandon.
Hi, Zafar. Great to hear from you. Now, of course, Zafar is a journalist and he's an Islamic scholar. He's been involved with Crescent International. He's involved in the community doing a lot, and he's one of our favorite guests, commenting on a number of issues on a regular basis. Zafar, it's so great we could catch you for this week because there's been so much news of interest and things that we think could really use your perspective.
Thank you.
As soon as I heard of some of this news, I mean, there's the case of Karzai, and people are asking about this even right now. So Afghan President Hamid Karzai has threatened to join the Taliban, according to many sources, if the West kept pressuring him to do various things. And he was also saying that the Western powers were interfering in his election, trying to deny him re-election, and that the NATO is there to help, but we run things as Afghans. So he's made a number of statements, and there's been reactions by United States politicians and whatnot. And I'd just like to know, I mean, first of all, what can you tell us about why Karzai is saying all these things? I mean, what's happening here?
Well, there are several factors involved here. There is no doubt that there is a tremendous pressure on him from the West, particularly the Americans, who keep on badgering him to do this or do that, whereas, in fact, the poor guy has no power or authority in Afghanistan, so there is nothing that he can do. But the Americans are trying to push all the blame onto his shoulders for whatever failures that have occurred in Afghanistan. And there are many. That includes, for instance, attacks on civilian targets in which women and children are killed, and Karzai has virtually or absolutely no control over that. So that is one aspect. The other, of course, is that the Americans actually in the last presidential elections that occurred on August the 20th of 2009, the Americans were hoping that their favorite candidate, Abdullah, would win. But when that did not occur, then, of course, they turned their guns against Karzai. Now, you know, allegations of vote rigging, etc., have gone on, which is absolutely correct. But I don't think that Abdullah was above that, nor the fact that the Americans wanted him to be in power, because that would have then facilitated the American policy in a much broader way, because what Karzai has been doing is also reaching out to some of the leadership of the insurgency. Now, Karzai is actually indulging in politics according to the Afghan way. In Afghanistan, there are no permanent enemies, nor are there permanent friends. So friendships and enmities, break and are formed again. They try to arrive at some kind of an understanding with each other, whereby they would be able to work out a formula so that they can share power with each other as well as the resources. And this is what Karzai had been attempting to do, but it would appear that in recent months, Karzai was perhaps striking on his own because he felt that the Americans were putting too much pressure on him. Secondly, that he was losing credibility with his own people. And Americans were making deals with various warlords behind his back. And so on the one hand, while the Americans are saying that there is corruption in the Afghan government, which is a fact, and that there are warlords in the Afghan government and parliament, which is a fact, but the fact also is that the Americans have made their own deals with warlords. So as long as the warlords work for the Americans, then the Americans are quite happy. And when somebody else recruits a warlord or gets him on his side, then immediately it becomes unacceptable and the Americans start to make noise.
Zafar, it's Peter Leibovitz here. How are you doing?
Peter, how are you?
Very good. In light of what you just said, is there in the reflection, in the tension between Karzai and the United States, also reflection and tension in between the NATO power between NATO powers themselves?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, what Karzai was doing by reaching out, for instance, to some of the Taliban leaders, as well as, you know, he has held a number of meetings with representatives of the Hizb-e-Islami group, another opposition group. Both Britain, the Netherlands and a number of other European countries have been urging Karzai to reach out to these people and to make some deal with them so that the level of hostility and resistance can be contained. Now, the Americans were not in favor of this approach. The Americans still wanted to first try to undermine or to degrade the resistance before they would sit down and talk. So, as you pointed out, what Karzai is doing also reflects this division between the U.S. on the one hand and the other NATO members on the other. There is a difference of opinion between the two groups. And, of course, the British and the Dutch, et cetera, are simply reflecting public sentiment that are that is not in favor of war anymore, and their people are demanding that their troops should be withdrawn, whereas the Americans are still thinking of continuing these military operations until August of 2011. And I just quickly want to add this whole notion about this operation in Marja that took place, that was launched in early March, although the announcement for the operation was made in mid-February. Now, when you think about military operations, obviously any military operation that is intended to achieve victory, you would not declare that ahead of time to say that, well, we are going to launch a military operation in such and such a place.
The whole
purpose was to give notice to the Taliban so that they should leave that place, which this is precisely what they did, because they cannot fight a pitched battle. They don't have heavy weapons. They don't have anti-aircraft guns or anything like that, so they left the place. Besides, Marja is such a nondescript place. I mean, it's an unknown place. So here you have tens of thousands of American and other troops descending on Marja with their heavy guns, helicopters, and armored personnel carriers, as if this is the battle for Stalingrad or something. I mean, it was nothing. You know, the whole of Marja and all the surrounding villages do not add up to 50,000 inhabitants. So, you know, I mean, it was just a non-event. But the Americans had to present some kind of a victory to people back home to say that the so-called Obama surge is working, and that they conquered all of the 50,000 inhabitants of Marja, and that's a feather in their cap.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, considering that in World War II, they hit hundreds of thousands of soldiers and never told the Germans when they were going to do D-Day.
Yes.
They spent a long time. They seemed to declare to everybody where they were going, which goes to the next point. I mean, is this part of, during that period of time, they arrested some Taliban leaders in Pakistan.
Yes.
But it didn't seem like those leaders were hiding. They were the leaders that seemed to be talking to, or at least they came out to talk to in these so-called negotiations.
Yes, of course. The most prominent of these people that was arrested was Mullah Abdul Ghani Baradar, now who's considered to be the second in command to the Taliban chief, Mullah Omar. Now, it's interesting to find out, I mean, I want to share a little bit of a history of Mullah Baradar with you. He had attended the conference in London on January the 28th. So obviously the UN or some other agent organization must have provided him a passport, because he could not have traveled on an Afghan passport. Then from London, Mullah Baradar and representatives of Karzai's government flew to Maldives. A beautiful place, I must say. I've been there. I went there in October. It's a holiday resort, and I sort of thought to myself, you know, what would these people be doing in Maldives, sort of, you know, looking at bikini-clad women and so on in these resorts? They must have had a whale of a time there. and then from there, Mullah Baradar was flown by the UN to Dubai, and from Dubai he was brought to Pakistan. Now, in all of these discussions, what was taking place was that this was all of these negotiations and discussions were taking place bypassing Pakistan. So Pakistani government and particularly the army was not involved in this. And that's something that the Pakistan army would not tolerate, because they say that if you want to have any agreement in Afghanistan, then Pakistan's interests must be respected, because Pakistan, you know, has really suffered a lot as a consequence of the war in Afghanistan. Right from 1978, I mean, you know, Pakistan hosted more than 5 million Afghan refugees, and to this present day, there are more than 2 million Afghan refugees in Pakistan, who are paid for, supported, and looked after by the Pakistan government. So Pakistan has taken a tremendous amount of economic sort of burden on its shoulders to take the responsibility for some of these refugees. And also, the fighting in Afghanistan has spilled over into Pakistan. So the kind of mayhem and the chaos that we see in Pakistan today is the direct result of America and NATO's military operations in Pakistan. So Pakistan is paying a tremendous cost. And here we had a situation whereby the UN and the Karzai government were making a private deal with the Taliban, and Pakistan stepped in and said, well, that would not be permitted. So now those back-channel negotiations have come to an end, and we also saw that the Americans had to, of late, accept Pakistan's interest in Afghanistan, and the tone in Washington has also changed. Even General Petraeus had said on March the 13th on a TV interview in the U.S. that America does recognize Pakistan's strategic interests in Afghanistan. So this was a change of tone in the American position, because America realized that if they don't take Pakistan into confidence, then Pakistan can make life very difficult for America in Afghanistan.
But it sounds also that it's just as dangerous to be a friend of America as it is to be an enemy of America.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So the guy comes out and shows himself, and then thank you very much. Then they declared this great intelligence victory when they knew where he was all this time.
Yes, exactly.
And talking about friends and enemies of the United States and destabilization, I know this is a little, it's close to the area. Today there was the press has stated that the president of Kazakhstan, right? Kazakhstan, is that right?
Kyrgyzstan, yeah.
Kazakhstan has fled, and there seems to be some sort of, some sort of rebellion has just gone on over the last 24 hours in a country that has a big American airbase.
Yes, yes. In fact, the latest reports that I have received from the area, in fact, one of our correspondents who knows Russian fluently, because there is much greater news, of course, in the Russian media than you would find in the Western media, but they have confirmed that the president of Kyrgyzstan, President Bakiyev, Kurmanbek Bakiyev, has already fled the country. The prime minister, Daniyar Usinov, has already resigned, and the opposition have established a popular people's government after there were, you know, clashes in a number of cities, etc., over rising prices, corruption, and so on, and arrest of opposition leaders. In fact, the news from Russia, particularly from Moscow, they say that this is their domestic affair, but the Russians have already said, the Russian president, Dmitry Medvedev, he had said that the protests showed the outrage at the existing regime. Now, the existing regime, of course, was of President Bakiyev, who had entered into an agreement with the United States and provided the military base, the air base at Bishkek, which is the capital city, or actually Manat, the other military base, from where American military forces and aircraft used to land there, and supplies were sent into Afghanistan when American supplies were threatened through Pakistan. Now, although still about 70 or 80% of American supplies go through Pakistan, but they are coming under increasing pressure from various groups. These convoys are being targeted, whereas supplies coming through Kyrgyzstan, through the Manat Air Base, are much safer because there are no attacks on those convoys, and in any case, those are airlifted. So it seems that the government that was pro-American has been overthrown, and the opposition has taken over. But I'm not quite sure whether the opposition would be able to maintain an independent position, because Kyrgyzstan is a small country in terms of its resources. The population is less than 5 million, and of all the stans in Central Asia, it is the poorest of all of them, and it doesn't even have many resources, so they are definitely dependent on outside support. So in that sense, my reading of the situation is that perhaps the Americans would come with offers of money and so on, and they would be able to get the new government also in their pocket, and the situation would continue as it is. But what this does show is, in fact, the power of the people, that the people were upset when, of course, you know, when they demonstrated, in certain cities, the police came and fired at them, and that really outraged the people. And they said that, you know, on the one hand, prices have skyrocketed, there is so much corruption in the country, and when we protest against these things, instead of addressing our concerns, you come out with your heavy guns. So that really sparked the massive demonstrations and essentially a people's uprising to oust the government.
And, by the way, which is interesting because Bakiyev, right? He was a product of one of those colored revolutions.
Exactly.
He was a product of the Tulip Revolution. It seems like each one of those colored revolutions have been coming to ignoble fates.
That's correct. Yes, exactly.
And the ones that were supposed to bring democracy only brought corruption.
Absolutely, yes. And in fact, you know, he had done the same thing to his predecessor. He had essentially, as you said, he had come through this so-called color revolution backed by the Americans, and of course, as soon as he came to power, he immediately opened the military base to the Americans, because the previous government was asking for more money from the Americans for the base, and so the Americans were not happy about that. Although last year, Bakiyev also got more money because when he told the Americans that he was going to cancel the agreement or the lease for the air base, unless the Americans increased the money to him, the Russians promptly stepped in and they said that they would compensate for any losses that Kyrgyzstan suffers. But of course, the Americans were able to come up with more cash, and so the agreement was signed. I mean, you know, it's incredible. Let me give you some figures. The initial agreement was the Americans were paying $5 million a year for that base. Just $5 million. Can you imagine? I mean, that's a ripoff. I mean, the Americans spend about $1 billion a day in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And yet they wanted to give him just $5 million. That's not even small change, for God's sake. And he was asking for $60 million. So the Americans initially balked, and then they agreed to that. So, I mean, even $60 million is peanuts when it comes to the amount of money that the Americans are throwing in Afghanistan and Iraq and every other place.
And plus, I mean, that air base is, I mean, when you look at American foreign policy, they got China to the east of it, Russia to the north of it, and Iran, Afghan, and Iran to the south of it, right?
Yes.
So that's a critical air base. It's part of the Americans, strategic plan.
Oh, absolutely. It's an extremely important base, and yet, the Americans were being extremely stingy about it. I mean, obviously, that's what they do. They sort of, you know, try to squeeze as much as they can from other people and pay them pittance, and yet, they have an enormous budget that they could have easily given to these people. But what they do is they try to get the officials on their side. They bribe them, give them some money, and as far as the government is concerned, that continues to remain poor and struggling.
Well, and of course, the irony of all the ironies is that Bakiyev, who's been notorious in his suppression of his people, hasn't been talked about in the West much because he has been on their payroll.
Exactly.
But meanwhile, you know, in a country like Iran, where they actually have elections and do have, you know, freedom of speech to criticize and do these things, they put that at number one on their list.
Yes, exactly. So that's, like, you know, anybody who is a friend of the U.S. or the West, no matter what they do, they can commit murder, they can kidnap people, they can steal elections, that's perfectly okay. But when you do not accept the West's demands, then obviously, you know, that government, that leader is demonized. So you gave the example. I mean, you know, you can give other examples. For instance, in Pakistan, the president, Asif Ali Zardari, I mean, he's a well-known crook. He's a notorious thief. There are so many cases against him. But since he accepts America's hegemony, America's demands, so you don't hear much about Zardari's corruption or things like that. But when it comes to Iran, which has a popularly elected president who is a very humble man, very, you know, hardworking, looking after the welfare of the people, he's demonized. All kinds of lies are told about him, and he's vilified endlessly. So we see these contradictions and these double standards being practiced with respect to American foreign policy as well as their media approach to these issues.
That's when you get to hear about it.
Yes, exactly.
You got to go through Tiger Woods and Michael Jackson before you get to hear about something like as important as that.
Yes.
Zafar, I want to thank. I should ask Brendan. Do you have any more questions? I mean, this was a great learning, instructive interview.
You guys covered it all. I mean, more beyond what we would have initially done.
To have that, that's why you should listen to Unusual Sources, to have that up to the minute news of a Kazakhstan.
Yes.
That's fantastic. We want to thank you very much for informing us, as you usually do.
That's my great pleasure, Peter and Brandon. Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, and that's Zafar Bangash?
Yes, thanks, Zafar.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye now.